Dan Hathaway, and this is CyberViews. Today's podcast is called The Top Network Audit Findings, and is about the audit findings that we have seen in our last 20 audits. We find that sharing this information is very beneficial to our clients because, let's face it, they're going to learn from our other clients, right? And so it's befitting that our first release of our podcast series includes an episode about network assessments. The first engagement we performed way back in July of 2000, you know, the year 2000, the turn of the century, was a vulnerability assessment. And so I really think it's interesting how we're going to start off talking about not just vulnerability assessments, but network configuration audits, virtual environment reviews, penetration tests, you know, all the different type of testing that a community-based bank or a small credit union would be implementing in 2023. But it's also befitting that I'm going to be interviewing Sharon Waugh, who has a number of letters after his name and who has been blazing the audit trail at Infotex since about 2005. He actually developed our network configuration audit in 2006, and our clients loved it. Nobody else was doing network configuration audits. Yeah, Sharon, you were, what, using Microsoft Security Baseline Analyzer as the main?
Oh, yeah.
That and so Sean, you hail from Cincinnati, right?
That's correct. And a Purdue graduate.
A graduate from Purdue. What do you got? Five letters CISSP or?
Yep.
Notice people don't really list their Microsoft letters anymore. So not the just Microsoft in our inaugural podcast. I wouldn't want
to. It's not as relevant to the this particular topic. So
definitely. And so the reason we're doing this podcast is because Sean has actually analyzed, you know, a lot of the technical findings that we run into as we're auditing community-based banks. Infotex has been auditing community-based banks for over 20 years now. But, you know, in these last four, 3 years, we've been seeing some trends. And so talk to us about how you analyzed those trends. What did you do, Sean?
What did I do? Well, thanks for the introduction, Dan. And yeah, basically I was taking a look back at a lot of the technical audits that we've done since about 2018, 2019 through the present day, and looking at some of the top technical findings that we see repeatedly. So the most common types of technical findings in our audits of financial institutions. And I've organized them into various categories. And as we do with all of our technical findings and our audit engagements, kind of ordered them by risk ranking. So the highest or critical top risks will be the first ones that we discuss. And then as we go on, we'll get down to the sort of the lower hanging fruit style findings.
Now, when you say risk ranking, you know, that could mean a lot of things to a lot of people. Are you talking about just the risk rankings that are coming out of Nessus or, you know, the tools you're using, or have you risk ranked them, you know, with your own methodology, or how, talk to us a little bit.
It's kind of a combination of both. So we definitely take into account the risk rankings from the tools that we use to analyze networks and vulnerabilities. But we also take into account other contextual information that we're privy to as auditors. And so in that regard, what we're looking at really when we're looking at this type of risk is actually more of residual risk. Because we're not asking, when we test our clients' networks and audit them, we don't ask them to disable really any controls. So we're just looking at it as their network is set up, if an attacker somehow got access, what would they be able to see with all the existing controls that that client has in place in effect?
Okay, that makes sense. And because So the metrics that are coming out of this, the tools you might be using, they're reporting inherent risk.
Correct.
But taking into consideration other mitigating controls, other compensating controls, you know, the volume, I suppose, of the assets that might have a particular vulnerability in them. And
to a degree, obviously there's some stuff that we don't know, because we do try to keep a lot of these tests blind. But more importantly, we're not asking our clients to disable any controls that they already have in place. So our tools are only going to be able to see the stuff that's visible with their existing security controls in place.
Got it. Got it. And so then the deliverable from this analysis is this top technical findings spreadsheet then.
Huh?
And, you know, describe that a little bit. I'm looking at it right now. It looks to me like you've got a number, you know, maybe like 20 findings here, and then there's some categories on the right side. What's up with this?
Yeah, so again, we looked back at the most common recurring technical findings across all the audits we've done over the last 4 or 5 years, and then grouped them together in categories and then risk ranked them so that the most concerning type of findings are the first ones are at the top of the list.
And so the first and most concerning probably isn't going to be a surprise to anybody, but it's
right. Reported
operating system and software versions. But what's kind of neat about this is then you drill down. And so let's talk about how, you know, that kind of ends up presenting itself, where you've broken it into four different areas.
Sure. So yeah, definitely one of the most concerning vulnerabilities that we do see on a recurring basis is unsupported software. That could be anything from the operating system itself to applications like web programming languages like PHP. It is common for us to see these types of things. The reason it's concerning is because if something's unsupported, that means there's no longer any security updates or fixes being released for that software. And so any new vulnerabilities that are discovered in those systems are very likely not going to be patched. And so when we see these, obviously the recommendation is always to upgrade those systems to a supported version of an operating system or software application. Although a lot of times we find that that's not necessarily possible or within the control of the client itself. You know, a lot of times we'll see these findings on a vendor device, for example, and the vendor hasn't released an update and our clients are unable to update the device themselves because they don't have direct access to it. And so in those circumstances, the recommended method of remediation is to try to lock down access to that application or device as much as possible through the use of IP filters or otherwise restricting what devices the potential unsupported application or server can talk to, thereby reducing the scope of risk there.
That's great, Sean. And you know, what I really, you know, I'm seeing here, you know, that obviously I don't see a lot of Unix operating systems in banks, so that must be the vendor-supported devices where that's coming up as a finding, or is it more that there's not a lot out there, but the impact has been so high on those types of findings that it warrants being on the list?
I mean, well, you're right that it's typically a vendor device when we see something like an unsupported Unix or Linux operating system. We do definitely still see those, but any system that is unsupported is going to be a critical or high risk finding. Just again, due to the fact that there is no patches for any potential vulnerabilities. Now, I do want to clarify that when we report something as unsupported, that's separate from reporting actual vulnerabilities, right? So typically when we see an unsupported device or application, there will also be findings for the particular vulnerabilities that apply to that system.
Got it. Well, you know, these are, by the way, you know, audits of community-based banks. You know, most of the banks are smaller than a billion in asset size. And so it's not just your organization that still struggles with patching operating systems and their applications and that sort of thing, but it's an extremely important control that we just got to keep trying to stay on top of. The next big category I see here then is the out-of-band server management platform vulnerabilities. Help us understand that, Sean.
Sure. So this out-of-band server management platforms is something that comes by default on a lot of server hardware that you may buy from the big suppliers, you know, the Dells and the HPs of the world. The idea is providing some remote ability for administrators to be able to do things like power cycle a device, because, you know, in modern times, we have a lot of these devices located in like a data center where we're not necessarily physically next to it and can run over and hit a power button at a moment's notice. So having some way to remotely be able to do those types of operations is what these out-of-band server management platforms do. They run sort of at the BIOS level of a server, so independent of the operating system and any applications that are running on that system. The issue with these is, A, some administrators may not even be aware that they're there. They are typically enabled by default, so you have to actually take steps to turn them off if you're not going to be using them. And they're not necessarily immediately visible either, because most of them are configured to use DHCP by default, which means they will automatically try to grab an IP address. It's not going to wait for you to assign one to it. The other issue with this is, like anything else, any code that's written, it's potentially going to have vulnerabilities over time the longer it's been out there. And since these out-of-band management platforms aren't part of the OS or the application running on those systems, they're typically overlooked by a lot of patch management programs. And so a lot of times in our audits, these are very common findings that we see missing patches or vulnerabilities on these out-of-band management platforms. And since they have the ability to power cycle or shut down servers, that does represent, if nothing else, an availability or denial of service style risk.
What I'm hearing you say, though, is that, I mean, what's kind of the good news in this is that it's really more awareness that's going to solve the problem, that the administrators just need to be aware that, hey, you've got to take a look at these assets as well. We're looking at IPMI, HPM system management, HP. You know,
ILO is integrated lights out. That's just a different thing than this. It replaces the system management homepage. But yeah,
got it.
And then Intel has an implementation as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know. But you're not seeing a lot of cost in fixing this stuff. It's just, hey, let's make sure everybody's aware, you know, that you might have these systems in place, and if so, you need to get out there and patch these. And we've got the recommended mitigation for most systems right in the spreadsheet. Am I right about that, Sean?
That's correct. They're very easy to address. And this is the type of finding that we see when banks and financial institutions implement their own vulnerability management programs. This is where that program is going to influence your patch management program, because it's going to help you discover these types of findings that you may not be aware of. But then, like you said, it's awareness. Once you are aware of them, you can update your patch management strategy to make sure that they're addressed regularly.
Excellent. Well, the third category is a scary one, if you ask me. It's VMware and other virtual infrastructure vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and, like we said, a lot of things are the way trends are going. Things are moving to virtual infrastructure. It's just more cost effective. It's easier to manage, especially from a backup standpoint, backup and recovery. And VMware is kind of the leading provider of the virtual infrastructure software, at least presently. And when you're the big guy in the market, you're a big target as well. And so, you know, every virtual infrastructure platform has vulnerabilities. There's a higher focus on VMware because they're the biggest player in the market. So we do see missing patches for VMware as a very common finding in our audits.
Well, and you know, really, I mean, the misnomer that I just got done saying is that, you know, the good news is it's not going to cost a lot to fix this, but time is really where, yeah, I mean, we need to make sure we're aware of this so that when we invest the time anyway, we're catching everything and not, you know, realizing risk with all the effort that we're going through to patch this stuff. So I definitely recognize that time is a cost when it comes to addressing those and these issues. The fourth category, the network device firmware vulnerabilities.
This is another one similar to the out-of-band server management platform, where it's often overlooked until you implement a vulnerability management program that kind of brings awareness to these software versions that may not be already being addressed by your patch management program. So things like switches, other vendor-style devices, again, things that are outside of like your typical Active Directory domain, managed systems that you just may not think about. And again, this is, like I said, another important reason why a good vulnerability management program has a good influence on strengthening your patch management strategies.
Well, and it on a regular basis, probably more than annually, but it takes advantage of spreadsheets like this, Sean. I'm seeing, you know, I feel like, you know, if we walk through the rest of these categories one at a time, we're pretty much going to be saying the same thing over and over again, because the power here is, you know, going out to our website, downloading this spreadsheet, just making sure that your vulnerability management system, if you already have one stood up, is considering all of these categories. The remaining categories, by the way, are web server vulnerabilities, default or null passwords, deprecated protocol versions. And I mean, we probably all recognize them from our audit reports. You know, maybe for the way we can end this podcast is, first of all, thank you very much for preparing this. You know, I've always believed that awareness is 9/11 in a battle, so I love that we're starting off our first podcast with a really good awareness tool. I've always felt like, especially community-based banks, when we talk about awareness, we're so focused in on end-user awareness, board awareness, customer awareness, that we forget that the technical team needs tools as well, and thus I'm proud we're making a spreadsheet like this available. Any last comments, Sean?
No, I think you summed it up pretty well. If there's one takeaway from all of this, it's that, you know, a good vulnerability management program helps strengthen your patch management strategy, which obviously improves your security posture from a technical standpoint.
It sure is demonstrating an ROI, that's for sure. Well, thank you very much, Sean. I really appreciate your time. And by the way, anytime you hear us talk about deliverables or, you know, giveaways, free giveaways, by the way, in any of these podcasts, please know that all you have to do is go to cyberviews.infotext.com and just search for the name of the podcast on that page, and you'll find there the deliverables that will help you get started on some of the action items that might have arisen out of this podcast.